ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Time to sit down on the couch once again. This is the 15 minutes every week where we discuss TV and streaming shows on ABC Radio National with me, Jason DeRosso. And sitting next to me on the couch each week is a woman who watches more TV than I thought was humanly possible. It's Wenli Ma. How are you?
Hello.
You're also a great Bret Easton Ellis fan, and we're looking at a Bret Easton Ellis adaptation this week.
I feel like there are people who are like, especially older millennials, were all on the Bret Easton Ellis train at some point. I'm sure all of Gen X as well.
I like Bret Easton Ellis a lot, though I'm not by no means someone who's read even most of his books. I've read two books and obviously seen everything that's been adapted for screen. And here we go again with another adaptation. This is Bret Easton Ellis' semi-autobiographical book, The Shards, hitting the small screen. It's a story about, well, growing up rich in 1980s LA.
Super relatable.
A serial killer is on the loose. Well, it's aspirational a bit.
Is it aspirational? I don't want these kids' lives. I don't think I've ever wanted to be any character in a Bret Easton Ellis book. Full disclosure, I have not read The Shards.
It's like the only book you haven't
read. Yeah, I've read all of his previous books and I used to be obsessed with him. And he really got into this weird place in Twitter over many years and I fell off the Bret Easton Ellis train.
Yeah, well, for the people who don't know Bret Easton Ellis's work, I would describe, this show, I think, and presumably the novel on which it's based, is pretty emblematic of the Bret Easton Ellis tone. It's paranoid. There's gay repression.
It's provocative. It's stylish. Yeah. It's
unreliable narrator as well.
Unreliable narrator. It's stream of consciousness. It's very, like, it's shallow, but it's also condemning shallowness.
Well, I love the way that also there's a kind of droll, wry quality, a detached quality to a lot of his protagonists, and the unreliable narrator comes in here because every now and again, Bret Easton Ellis, and this show does it too, he offers you a glimpse of how the narrator is not actually as cool as or she appears.
Absolutely. In fact, it's very affectless. Like, there's a voiceover narration of the main character who for the first time is actually named Bret Easton Ellis. Oh, is it the first time? Maybe in Luna Park he is as well. I forget.
Luna Park was very, that's one of his books I've read. That was very self-autobiographical, but I'm not sure if he actually called himself Bret in that book.
But yes, there's always a character in his books where, you know, he is basically them. So he famously, of course, wrote American Psycho, and when it was released, he said that it was based on his father. And by the time he went around promoting Imperial Bedrooms years and years later, he admitted that he based it, Patrick Bateman, on himself and not his dad.
Now, Igbig Rigney plays Bret Easton Ellis in this show, and he's wonderful. And the big crisis in his life at the moment is that there is a serial killer out on the loose in LA at the moment. People are going missing. People are turning up gruesomely murdered. And there's
these ritualistic elements.
Ritualistic elements with things stuffed into orifices and all that. I'll leave it at that. And then at this beautiful, very rich, privileged school that he's attending, a new boy arrives, and everyone looks like an adult show, but a new boy arrives and he's just a little bit sinister. Here's a taste.
Being a teenager in 1981 was perhaps the last moment of our youth.
Tell me about this story. It's about a group of young people.
Does it have sex in it?
Yes.
Pink cocaine.
Cocaine? As in drugs?
Male hookers.
That too.
Well, everyone loves a good coming of age story.
It's the beginning of our senior year.
We're gonna roll the school,
don't we already?
Principal said I should come say hi.
Wanna join us?
I'd love to.
New guy likes you. He doesn't like me.
Did you guys ever date?
We were always just best friends.
Sounds terrifying.
There's something very wrong with him.
You always embellish everything.
You should actually make a little bit of an effort to become my friend.
Or else what, Robert?
Or else what?
Now, we got to say who who plays this mysterious young man with the...
It's Homer Gear.
Sunglasses.
Son of Richard Gear. And one of his castmates is Kaya Gerber, daughter of Cindy Crawford.
I know.
Who, so there's a real weird Venn diagram here, obviously. And Cindy Crawford and Richard Gere were famously together in the early 90s.
Yeah, which is, you know, a decade to, but, you know, there's something about the retroness of this show set in the early 80s and that, I don't know.
Well, I mean, they actually even reference American Gigolo at one point.
Yes, yeah, yeah,
And which had come out in 1980, well, only 2 years before.
Yeah, it's a very Brady Sinalis type of film. I've only seen the first two episodes. And I have
seen all nine.
Right, and I texted you and I said, Brett's back, baby, or something to that effect. And you wrote back saying, he's only screenwriter on the first two episodes. Now, I took that as being a bit of a warning to not get too excited.
That is definitely your warning that the first two episodes are the best ones. Should also mention at this point that the person who has created this show is Ryan Murphy.
Hello, we've buried the lead. That's right. This is Ryan Murphy, Bret Easton Ellis collaborating in a sense.
I think on paper made so much sense because Ryan...
Did it?
I felt like it made sense because Ryan Murphy is also a maximalist storyteller. Mm. He also likes to push things way beyond the edge. I mean, Glee aside and The New Normal, which was the sitcom he did. I mean, everything else, you know, American Horror Story, American Crime Story, all those serial killer shows I don't like those shows.
Yeah.
He likes things that are like squishy and squeamish. And so I thought these two storytellers with these very maximalist over the top instincts would actually go really well together. But after those first two episodes, I thought it just petered out. It just did not really take it to that unhinged, deranged level that I was hoping for. I thought it was going to be deliciously grotesque, and it's just
doesn't get that. Well, Bret Easton Ellis, though, is look, I describe him as maximalist too in some ways, but isn't he also all about this cool detachment? And that's the sort of yin yang of his aesthetic. And Ryan Murphy, there's no kind of cool detachment in Ryan Murphy. Do you get the feeling that Ryan Murphy gets Bret Easton Ellis in the way that we'd like him to get him?
I'm sure he gets Bret Easton Ellis in a way that he thinks he does, because he's talked about having read every Bret Easton Ellis novel the moment it's released, probably beforehand because he's, you know, cool and connected. And even something like the Ryan Murphy show that came out, I think it was last year, called The Beauty, I felt owed a lot in tone to Bret Easton Ellis and just made me think of Glamorama, even though it's not necessarily that, you know, connected. But I don't know. I just thought it would be bigger, and it wasn't.
Because it starts off so well.
It starts off really well.
It's just smooth surfaces and bright sunshine and pastels and then gruesome murders.
And then there are seven more episodes that a lot of the times doesn't go anywhere.
Well, that's a pity. I think I'll persist a little bit more and see if I agree with you. But it roars out of the gates wonderfully, I think, The Shards. So check out at least those first two episodes. See if it hooks you for the rest. The Shards is streaming over at Disney Plus. New episodes weekly. They're kind of dropping.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it too, because I binged it and I think it kind of deadened me.
Yes, and there is, but also there is this mystery that I think they're doing well to sort of tease out for audiences. Okay, the other show we're looking at this week is a new DC Comics show called Lanterns. Now, don't be too put off by that, because I think it's really good. It's a sort of odd couple buddy movie. Lanterns refers to the Green Lantern, and so this is about a Green Lantern essentially mentoring a new Green Lantern. The new guy, young black guy played by Aaron Pierre, he's being trained in the way of Green Lanterndom by an old white guy, Kyle Chandler. He's really good in it.
Love Kyle Chandler. I love him in everything.
And soon they're investigating a mass shooting in small town Nebraska that leads them to uncover an alien conspiracy.
What do you know about manhunters?
Where'd you hear that word?
Manhunters are the most dangerous beings to ever exist in the galaxy. It could take the form of any species.
So it could be anyone.
He's gonna send an army to put you down.
Do you resent Pal Jordan?
The ring's always been mine. Jordan's just keeping it warm.
Sinestro.
You don't really believe he's your backup, do you, Hal?
No.
Let's say what he actually is.
My replacement.
It's great. Like, you'll see this comparison everywhere on the internet, which is it's DC Comics doing True Detective. And I think that is a very accurate comp, because it has that kind of washed out, you know, neo-Western feeling. But it is undoubtedly, you know, part of comic book lore. But I think, you know, the man that we have to credit here, I mean, there are a lot of people involved, obviously, is Damon Lindelof. And he did The Leftovers, you know, he's involved in Lost. But I think the thing you kind of want to look at before this is Watchmen. So he did this great, amazing adaptation of what the Watchmen comics maybe 10 years ago, also for HBO. And I think that was probably one of the best small screen, you know, shows in within that genre. And this here, it just, it feels like grown-up television. Like, it's dark, it doesn't hold your hand, and you've got these great performances. And even though, you know, I'm not always like, oh, alien story, comic books. I mean, I like comic book things, but sometimes it gets a little bit silly. But somehow it manages to make, you know, weird plot twists and weird genre devices sound really grounded.
It's also really central to this is an exploration of issues of race and issues of colonization in a way that's not too heavy-handed and I think integrated into the plot pretty well.
Yeah, and Watchmen did this really well.
Yeah, that's true. And then you've got this rivalry between these two central characters. You know, at first you're kind of thinking this is a Lethal Weapon kind of Men in Black funny thing, but there's something much darker going on between them and their rivalry, which I think the show handles well. But how good's Kyle Chandler?
Kyle Chandler is so amazing. I mean, he's, what, I think just turned 60, still and has that baby face.
But he looks, yes, but he does, but he looks weather-beaten and tired.
And like intentionally.
Yeah.
And so his character is also facing these questions of, you know, he spent 30 years as being this big superhero that everyone looks up to. And here comes along this younger man who is incredibly very competent as well and clearly intelligent and smart and could replace him. So it is this struggle about your own obsolescence and your purpose.
And you know what I love? It's just something very visual, but I love these little moments in shows or films that I think are like gestures. When Kyle Chandler has to fly because he's Superman and he's just wearing a crumpled leather jacket and he's unshaven and he looks all of those 60 years. And there's something so graceful and beautiful about how that body suddenly just stiffens up a little bit
and takes off.
Does this jump and takes off. And they do that so well. Like, I've just seen the recent Spider-Man, and I don't think some of the biggest movie of the year, but I don't think some of the CGI in that film works anywhere near as well as the CGI moment where Kyle Chandler at 60 gets off, you know, terra firma and flies into space and still seems old.
Yeah,
and
he's not wearing the costume, and they have this little bit in, I think, the first episode about why he doesn't wear the uniform, the costume of the Green Lantern. And I think it does really speak to just how this they're approaching the show, which is that all of these serious things, sometimes they're, you know, treated quite goofily, are happening, but we're not, it's all very human.
Yeah. Look, I didn't expect to like this more. I haven't finished it, like I haven't finished The Shards. I didn't expect to like The Lanterns. Or is it Lanterns?
Lanterns.
I didn't expect to like Lanterns more than The Shards.
Yeah.
I think I do.
We got given 4 episodes out of the full series, and at least in the early episodes, it's very good.
Yeah. Okay. Lanterns, screening on HBO Max in Australia. New episodes weekly as well. They're dropping them, which suits something with this kind of mystery around it. All right. That is it for another episode of The Couch. Thanks for your company. I'm Jason DeRosso.
I'm Wenli Ma.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.